Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money, major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 0.035% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75, 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? March has never changed anything.
around for another installment of It's My House. And let's see, there's a meeting tonight. I guess we'll call it a meeting. Well, it's a room. They call them rooms on Clubhouse. Tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Hope Dream Habitat will have a, I guess you call them their rooms. They call them rooms on Clubhouse. You also call, there'll be a conversation. Okay, but we'll get into that a little bit later. Today we're going to continue to talk about Hope Dream Habitat, and the jump off topic for today. And I just discovered this yesterday. I mean, sort of like after the fact. World Homeless Day. I think there are two events. World Homeless Day, and then I think there's international, something dealing with international homelessness. So we're going to talk, we're going to see if we can merge those two together, Hope Dream Habitat into World Homeless Day and International Homeless Day. It's two separate events. One takes place in October. One took place in this month of November, and I think we just missed it by like a day or two. So, but getting momentum to go into 2023, because they already have a date set for one of them in October of next year. In any event, just one more piece of early morning, well, not early morning, mid-morning motivation with Jamarian Styles. This is the guy. I would say he did the impossible. How can you even make a basketball team and you don't even have any hands? But he did.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Styles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out. He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left, and when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did, and sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry, because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right. Time for, like I said, another installment of It to My House. And today we're going to, I'm just putting it out there. We're brainstorming. Hope Dream Habitat. How can, because like I say, there's World Homeless Day. Or is either World Homeless Day. There are two events. There's World Homeless Day or International Homeless Day, and then there's another event called like Hunger and Homeless Day or Hunger and Homeless Week or Month or whatever. That was this month. We missed it like by a day or two. But I'm looking at this Dream Habitat. Okay, now I'm getting ready to open up, Carlos, your mic. And I'm just thinking out loud. Well, you know what? Let me ask. Oh, let me open up this. I got a question to ask. Good morning, Carlos.
Good morning, Vaughn. How are you, brother? Or L.A.?
Fine. Yeah, well, either one. It worked. Okay, well, we'll go with that. The question, because you're an engineer, or you're an EE major, electrical engineer, and I understand, man, that was a friend of mine that went through that. He graduated from George Washington University. He got his undergraduate degree in electrical engineering. Man, the way he describes it was like a boot camp. He had no social life for 4 years. And he worked at McDonald's during that period of time, you know, for his, you know, bread and butter money.
Yeah.
But he was still living at home. He was like a honor roll student. He took advanced math courses all through high school and all that. But he said, because I know when, because he worked for Hughes Aircraft himself, and he said Hughes Aircraft wanted him to go back and get his master's. Now, I don't know if he ever went and did that, but he was very hesitant to do it when I was in touch with him on a regular. Because, I mean, just from what he experienced at GW, he said, I mean, undergrad, you know, it was very intense. Matter of fact, one of his professors early on suggested that he quit, but he stuck with it, and he got hired by Hughes his junior year. He got a job with Hughes Aircraft a year before he graduated. So then he went out. He moved from D.C. to Torrance, California, was where he was living.
Yep.
At the time, but that was back during the early '80s, but late '70s, early '80s. But
That would have been my time there also.
Okay. But here's the question I have to ask. Now, let me build up to it. Now, I believe the Model T, when Henry Ford was alive, I think it took over a month or two to build a Model T, if I remember my career reading. Now, eventually, and I think there were, I forgot how many parts were involved, but eventually he got that down to 90 minutes to assemble a car, the Model T.
Right.
Now, Toyota, Ford might produce 12 to 14 cars per minute. Now, today. Now, Toyota, and I'm thinking just on averages here, Toyota, let's say the average Toyota might have 30,000 parts, and they assemble 29.9 cars per minute.
Wow.
So my question, now it didn't start off that way, but you know. So now you're an electrical engineer. Now with your Dream Habitat structure, dwelling house, roughly how many parts does that have?
That's a great question. I've never really thought of it, but let me think real quick. Under 100.
Okay.
Well, it depends what you consider a part. you know, if you break it down to the actual, you're talking like down to the actual component level. The way that Chris builds.
Yeah, you know, we're not going to bring in the screws and the nails and all that. Just like
okay.
A ballpark figure. Just
let me break it down. You got the frame, okay?
Right.
And the frame, just think of it as an A-frame that's modified. It doesn't quite look like an A-frame. It looks kind of like a distorted A-frame because you want the angle on the south to be a little bit steeper, usually depending where you're at on your latitude. Actually, an A-frame will work somewhere, you know, somewhere where the sun, let me think about this. As you go further north, the roof, which they go further south, the roof gets flatter because the sun is over the top of the roof. So, yeah, as the angle goes lower, you're getting closer to the equator. As the angle gets steeper, you're getting closer to the North Pole because you're trying to make the glass track the winter sun. So in the equator, the winter sun's above your head, right?
Yeah.
And in the North Pole, the winter sun is either in front of you or behind you all the time, right? 6 months of light and 6 months of dark. So those are the two extremes, and the angle changes from completely flat, like in the equator where the sun's right above. And as you go upwards, the angle starts rising from 0 to 1 degree to 2 degree, and it gets all the way to 90 degrees when you're at the North Pole, as you can imagine
mm-hmm.
that. So the angle of the glazing is a function of the latitude. So that's the one component that sort of changes. And I've got ideas, since he's doing an erector set, that you
right.
could have these pre-built where you could change the angle, right, just by adding another erector arm, for lack of a better term. You know, so you,
right.
you could have these kits set up for different latitudes. And for certain latitudes, you would increase the angle or decrease the angle, right?
Right.
So anyway, so you got the frame with an angle set for the latitude. And that frame is going to have most of the area facing towards the sun. So in the northern climates, you're going to be facing south. In the southern hemisphere, you're going to be facing north, right?
Right.
The glazing, the glass. And this is so, because you want to maximize all that solar energy that's coming in the wintertime. This is how these houses work. So now that you've maximized all the solar energy coming in the wintertime, the next component, you're going to need a glazing. And glazing is glass or plastic. And that's what's going to go in the frame part of the south part of the structure. So that's component number two. Components three and four, and I'm going by order of importance pretty much.
Okay.
So you've got a structure, you've got the glazing. The next super important components, you're going to need vents on the lower south, if you're in the northern hemisphere, and on the upper north of the structure. And this is so air can come through the structure, through the bottom, and then exit out the top. And this is what keeps the structure dry in humid areas and keeps the wind moving through it, well, in all areas. But in humid areas, of course, it pushes the humidity out of the structure. So that's the next component. You've got the north fence and the south fence, the frame and the glazing, right?
Uh-huh.
Now the next most, perhaps even the most important component, in the middle of that structure, right where the, you know, where the top of the A-frame is, you know, where the top of the slope is for the glazing,
uh-huh.
You're going to have, and this is, again, made with an erector set, which makes things really, really easy. You're going to have a structure that's basically a partition wall that is going to be lined and filled with water and painted black. And that's the thermal mass or the thermal battery of the structure. This is what allows that winter sunlight to shine on it. to heat it up and to be a storage for solar energy heat in the wintertime. And in the summertime, since the sun is high up in the sky, that water wall or that thermal battery is now going to be in the shade and is now going to keep the structure cool in the summertime. So that's the basic structure of a passive solar design invented by the Chinese, also known as an earthship. So earthship, passive solar, Chinese solar, greenhouse, all same technology. Now, what I did that's different, because the Chinese invented the Chinese solar greenhouse, what they would do is they would just make the back wall the water wall. They would take a bunch of barrels filled with water, painted black, and you can do this too. They're called earth-sheltered greenhouses is another term for them. And that's exactly what you do. You dig a hole, cover it with plastic, right angle for the sun, winter sun, and in the back of the hole, you've got a bunch of containers filled with water, which act as a battery. And now you've got a greenhouse that stays hot and cold throughout the year, irrespective of outside weather. You can keep it 70 degrees all year round because of the thermal battery and the ventilation, right, and the insulation of the structure. I'd say the water wall is the next component. After that, equally important is insulation. You want the structure fully insulated so that when the vents close, it's fully sealed, that there's no drafts in the house. This is called net zero construction. You don't want any drafts, no air leaks, and you want no thermal bridges. What that means is between any two materials that meet the inside and the outside, there's an insulator. And it could be wool, it could be hemp, it could be fiberglass. You know, there's lots of ways to skin that cat. So now you've got a fully insulated structure. So I'd say the next components after that, I'm not keeping count, are going to be the insulation, the insulating material, and then the structural insulating material. Structural insulating material, as you know, Vaughn, since you've done earthships, you know, people do stuff like rammed earth, tires full of dirt stacked together, covered with cob.
Yeah, that's how we did the foundation with rammed tires.
Yep.
Not brand new tires, people, but these were old, blown out. Well, they were
recycled.
No good. Right, exactly. And we just rammed earth and we shoveled the dirt in them and packed them in. That was the foundation that we used. That's how we built the foundation.
You can also make the walls from that, by the way. Like your true earth ships were all rammed earth and tires. And what they would do is they would stick the tires in a triangle pattern and make these walls that are like freaking 5 feet thick. Now, you could imagine when you have a wall that's 5 feet thick, you're very, very well insulated. You're probably R50 plus or more. So what that means is you have a structure that is very difficult to get hot and very difficult to get cold, which is advantageous, right? In other words, when you're in it in the wintertime, it takes a lot of energy to go through those thick walls and get that cold all the way from the outside to the inside. And remember, you've got that insulated layer of tires. So you've got something that breaks the path of cold from the outside to the inside. So these structures literally require no energy to heat and cool. You know, that's one component of these passive solar earthship designs. When they're properly done, they require no energy to heat or cool, except for the sun and except for the venting and except for the solar battery. So that's the simplest version of these structures. And picture a hole in the side of a mountain in China covered in plastic. Water-filled barrels in the back. Ancient technology, unpatentable, okay? So I built, I didn't have a cave or anything, so what I did is I took a carport and I took 2-inch thermoshield, which is around R18 or R20 or something, and I used that as my insulator all around the carport. So I've got a fully insulated box. I put vents on the south, vents on the north, and triple-pane polycarbonate on the glazing. And that was working very well. I stuck my aquaponic system inside of there, which is a fish tank plus grow beds. My aquaponic system is basically shaped like an octagon. And I've got a grow bed, three grow beds on the sun side, three grow beds on the dark side. On one of the sides, I've got my filter for the fish pond. On the other side, I've got my composting auto fish feeder system. So now I've got a way of growing vegetables inside of this structure, right, that's fully insulated. The problem was is the back of the structure is shaded. That's the way it's designed. You know, it uses the shade in the summertime to keep the water cool, to keep the structure cool. And this is why they have not been built commercially. They've been built for houses because we humans can live in the shade, no problem. But who wants a greenhouse where half of it is shaded, right? You can't produce on that half. And that's when the light bulb went off, because I had done experiments with mushrooms that I said, I know what grows in the dark side, the mushrooms. So I started integrating mushrooms in my aquaponic system in my greenhouse, my passive solar greenhouse. And they're doing well. You know, I could grow mushrooms seasonally, you know, depending on the summertime. It gets really hot in the greenhouse, so I had to grow Florida mushrooms. In the wintertime, when the greenhouse is getting cooler, I could grow some of the northern, you know, the colder species of mushrooms. But the bottom line was I couldn't grow every mushroom I wanted whenever I wanted, which, of course, as an engineer is a problem. And as we know, a problem is an invention waiting to be solved. So I started thinking, I said, well, how can I get the dark side of the greenhouse cooler? And then I realized I had read a patent from University of Maryland about using evaporative coolers inside of greenhouses to lower the temperature in the tropics, even though they don't work that well in the tropics. And that's when the light bulb went off, because I lived in Lancaster, California, in the Mojave Desert for like 7 years when I was working at Hughes Aircraft. So we use swamp coolers all the time, evaporative coolers, extremely simple machines. It's basically a blower and some straw in front of the blower. So the straw has a little water pump. That water gets pumped into the straw, and that's outside the house. And then there's a blower underneath the box that sucks air through the straw, which causes the wet straw to evaporate the hot, dry air and to push cold, moist air into the house. And these units are super low energy, and we had just one little tiny unit that kept our entire 2,500 square foot Rambler house at like 60 degrees if we wanted it. It would make it really, really cold. So they work very, 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 very well in dry climates. And that's when I realized, I said, whoa, I could put an evaporative cooler on top of the water wall, and now I have a way of pushing cold, moist air into the mushroom chamber so that now I can grow mushrooms all year around, all types of mushrooms all year around. And that's when I said, this is pretty huge. And that's the one that I filed in 13 countries and regions. It's been patented in the U.S., China, Korea just got granted. Japan is getting granted. U.S. was granted a while ago. Australia is not granted yet. New Zealand got granted. Anyways, you know, I knew I was onto something when I saw that, because it solved the problem with why Chinese solar greenhouses are not being used in large-scale commercial production. So my version of large-scale commercial production is plants, fish, and mushrooms. The plants are in the front of the greenhouse. The fish tank is between the plants and the mushrooms. The water wall is between the plants and the mushrooms, so it splits the fish tank in half. And then the back part, the dark side, is where you have your mushrooms. And then on top of the water wall, you've got your evaporative cooling system with a secondary roof to let all that cold air get pushed into the mushroom chamber. And then all that CO2 from the mushroom chamber gets pushed into the plant chamber, and that you get a little CO2 and O2 gas exchange within the greenhouse, and you get hot air, cold air exchange, dry air, humid air exchange. And when I figured that out and it worked, I built a little contraption in my greenhouse in my backyard. I was able to get about a 20-degree delta between the hot side and the cold side of the greenhouse. And I was able to get the humidity level up high enough in the mushroom side of the greenhouse where now I was able to produce fish plants and mushrooms inside of a greenhouse.
Mm.
So that was working
very
well.
Question. Now, when you built this,
we're counting components.
Or did you build it solo or did you have help?
I did it by myself. Well, I built it all by myself, and I built it from stuff that I could buy from Home Depot or Amazon intentionally because I was instructed to teach all humans how to build these things. So literally, I have documented the whole entire build. It's not complex. Now, this is my build. This is different than what Chris is doing, by the way. You know, I'm talking about do-it-yourself version in the backyard out of stuff from Home Depot and Amazon to see if I could do it. That was in engineering, we call it proof of concept. Before you go to production, you always do a proof of concept because, you know, if you're an engineer and the thing doesn't work, I don't care how pretty it is. You know, if the advanced tactical fighter can't fly, who cares? Right.
Right.
Who cares? It could look beautiful, but if it can't fly, I don't care. It's worthless to me. So for me, you know, as an engineer, function always comes first, and that's proof of concept. Will the concept function the way you expect it to? And it did. It was functioning. It was growing mushrooms, fish, and plants. And in fact, the mushrooms were not supposed to grow, by the way. That's another story. But they did. And it's because my fish tank is 2 parts per 1,000 saline, and the mushrooms are getting flooded with salt water, which keeps them from getting contaminated, which they normally would had I not had a fish tank in there with 2 parts per 1,000 salinity. So everything kind of came together. I don't want to say by accident. I want to say by divine inspiration because it really did. You probably heard this from a lot of people, inventors especially. It was literally downloaded into my brain. I don't know how else to explain it. You know, I was thinking about the problem, and, you know, you hear the saying, the light bulb goes off. You know, I think I call it divine inspiration. You know, literally the design came into my head. And I knew it would work. And also the thought that came into my head was that I need to teach people how to do this. That was the other part of it. And
now,
I don't want to get too hokey about it, but that was my
documented on average, because you've gone through a one, how long would it take or on average for a person to build one with
use Chris's model. I want to use Chris's model because I think it works. It builds community.
Mm-hmm.
It teaches people. I want to use his model. I would like somebody to purchase every single thing that I've got in my backyard, in my greenhouse, right?
Yeah.
And then we come over there and we do a workshop. And, you know, we need to get paid, right, for doing this, right? I mean, we're all trying to survive, right, as humans. We can't do everything for free because otherwise we can't live. But, you know, this would be like a paid workshop where now we come in and we build it with you. Right? We could do that with the DIY version in my backyard, the version that we're going to be developing with Chris Collins and his beautiful steel material, you know the Erector Set version. But the version I built, the cost of the materials was around $6,500. That was for everything. And this was all brand new, shipped, you know, we're talking not recycled, not scavenged, just bought and shipped.
Okay.
And that's why it was so expensive, right? Because I had a, you know, I had a get stuff shipped from, you know, Amazon. I had to make trips to Home Depot, et cetera. But if I had all the material in place, right, for the thing that I have in my backyard, I could probably build it with one other human in probably about a day max because now I know exactly how to build it. You know, the frame is a 10 by 20 carport, right? It's an A-frame.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is we build the frame without the roof, and then we take these shelving units that happen to be 1-inch holes on the ends, and we stick one on each corner, right? And then we fill the rest of the floor with these shelving units. They're plastic shelving units. You've probably seen them. They're these units you can build. They have these little cubes, and you just build them. There's a shelf, tube, shelf, tube, shelf, tubes, right? The tubes are 1 inch. And you stick four tubes in the corners, you add another shelf, four tubes in the corner. You know what I'm talking about. I use those as my floor. So this was not a permanent, you know, this is not, this is a permitless greenhouse because it's freestanding in my neighborhood. Check your regulations, obviously. In the country, who gives a shit? Pardon my French.
Right.
In the city, you know, that's where you got to worry about it. Anyways, then what you do, next step, is you pour gravel all over the shelving units, pea gravel. So now you've got the thing anchored down, right? It's not going anywhere. You've got your gravel holding down the metal frame, right? And you could even run anchors if you wanted to. And, you know, the carports come with little holes at the bottom of the feet that you can run studs, you know, spikes. So, yeah, you could do that as well. You know, whatever you want to anchor it as much as you can to the ground. But you're trying to avoid a foundation, right, because that's where you get into permit land. So now you've got the structure that's anchored to the ground, right? It's 1 inch,
yeah.
1 inch metal. Well, with 1 inch metal, you can attach 1 inch PVC to it using tees and elbows and you know, being creative. Now you can start taking that frame and you can start reinforcing it, right, with PVC, 1 inch PVC. So now
right.
you've got a reinforced frame. Now you're going to take the A frame and you're going to reinforce the roof there and you're going to extend the A. In my neighborhood, my latitude, I had extended by about 3 feet or so. The whole entire A part of my frame is 8 feet long for my angle. So anyways, you want to extend the A part of the frame a little bit. And by the way, on Clubhouse, I've done talks on this with a presentation that describes exactly what I'm talking about, that people can follow along and see exactly what I'm talking about. So now you've extended the frame from the A part, you know, the top part of the frame, right, where the – what's that called, the apex? I'm not a roofer or I'm an electrical engineer, so I don't even know the correct term. But, you know, at the very top of the house, the point, I don't know what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part you want to extend in order to get the correct angle for your triple pane polycarbonate glazing, which is 8 foot by 4 feet, right?
Right.
So now – we've got the frame extended. We've got it at the correct angle. And also on the bottom, we made a little 1 foot or so frame where the lower vents are going to go, right? So now we've got the upper part of the south, the lower part of the south, that's 8 foot by 4 feet PVC, and we've got structural support. So now we have a way of attaching the triple pane polycarbonate to the frame, right? And now we have a way of attaching the ThermoShield to the frame. So now that's the next step, is we're going to mount our polycarbonate panels onto the south side of the frame. We're going to take the rest of the unit and line it with with 2-inch ThermoShield. And now we've got the basic structure. We've got polycarbonate, ThermoShield, ThermoShield roof, ThermoShield east and west, and right now on the bottom we don't have any vents yet. Well, we take some ThermoShield, we cut it, and we make the vents for the lower south. We make some hinges, you know, to get the vents to move up and down. And then on the upper north roof, we also cut out some holes and we put some vents made of ThermoShield on that with a hinge that can open up and down. So you can picture now you've got vents on the lower south that can open out, vents on the upper north that can open upward. So now you have a way of ventilating the greenhouse. Finally, you want to cut a door. And now this is the magic part. And I know, you know, Chris's way, by the way, is going to be way faster. Let me tell you this. Because instead of doing all this, we're going to be building an erector set, right? With pieces that go into the ground, other pieces that get screwed together, you know, bolted together. So it's going to be much easier to assemble than this particular version is a little more complicated to build.
Well, your version is like the carport version.
Mine's the carport version. It's one that you can build right now. you know, if you copy what I did in my backyard, you could build it. The other part that I found that is really interesting, and you guys get the benefit of all my problems, right? Because, you know, I solved a lot of problems when I built this thing. Well, for example, how do you keep the thermoshield attached to the frame? Well, you get yourself some Gorilla Tape, which is super strong tape, and you tape the thermoshield to the frame. And then about every foot, you poke a hole in the tape, and you spray that great stuff foam into it. And now you've got a monolithic structure, because now all the thermoshield panels are mechanically attached to the frame with that great stuff foam, which you guys probably know what I'm talking. That stuff is incredible to fill cracks, holes, etc. Now you've got a solid metal and styrofoam structure that's fully sealed. It's got vents on the south, vents on the north, and glazing on the sun side. And it's fully insulated, and it can pass air.
Okay.
Right there, you can start growing food. At that point, you can start housing people. You can start growing food. Add the thermal battery. Now you've got a way of keeping it hot and cold without energy. There are vent openers that go into the lower. There's these little wax-filled cylinders that automatically open the lower vents and the upper vents. The other thing that you would want to do that I learned that I didn't do is you want to put some cladding on the thermoshield so you could take some of that siding material, you know, just regular plastic siding or whatever, wood siding, metal siding. And now you could put that along all of the exterior surfaces. And now you've got yourself something that looks decent, 10 by 20, fully insulated, passive solar structure. You add the thermal battery, now you've got a earth ship. You add the aquaponic system and the mushroom cultivation stuff, and now you've got a system that can grow fish plants and mushrooms with 4 feet of snow outside. If you guys go to OU812 Aquaponics on YouTube or Facebook, you will see videos, pictures of all the food that I've been growing over the past 11 years. All the fish, all the plants, all the mushrooms that I've been growing, all of it. All that content is from the greenhouse in my backyard.
Okay.
So what does Chris bring to the project? He brings a kit. You see, we were looking for, like, how can we make this into a kit? You know, well, right now
right.
I could ship you a carport. I could ship you I could ship you all the components from my Home Depot version. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we could build it, or you could build it based on the stuff that the guidance that I've given on YouTube. But what we're working on now with Chris is to see how we can, and today he sent me like hundreds of pictures of his machinery, you know, the houses he's building, how he's building them. You know, he's building legit houses, okay, just to be clear. I'm not an architect. I'm not a house builder, okay? I just happen to use my engineering skills to build something that I could make a proof of concept in my backyard that happens to work very well. If I had the siding on it, my wife wouldn't be yelling at me. That's the one mistake I made, which was crucial, was not putting siding on it and not putting roofing on it. Because that also protects the thermoshield, right? Thermoshield, you know, it starts getting hit by hail and stuff, and it's going to get all messed up. So that would be the one additional thing that I would do is add the shielding. The other thing that I would do, which I did, is there's these beautiful tapestries you can buy that are just these blankets, these linen sheets with beautiful nature photographs on them. And you could take those and line the whole inside of the greenhouse with those. And it looks like you're in the forest or with, you know, you could make it a theme. So now you've got a beautiful looking greenhouse that grows fish plants and mushrooms all year round. And now you have a place that you can go in the wintertime when it's freezing cold outside. You can go in there and you can enjoy the sun and the warmth and the fish and the plants. And this is what I want to bring to Scandinavia, by the way, this vision. They have fish plants and mushrooms growing naturally, right? But in the wintertime, they don't. So I want to start building little eco centers in Scandinavia where people can go in. There'll be artificial light, of course, because it's dark for 6 months of the year, but they can go in there and we can have lighting and fish and plants and mushrooms and give them a way to have nature when there's, you know, minus 50 degrees outside or whatever. So that's what happened. You know, that's the story of the greenhouse. The story of Chris is that I just met him on Clubhouse, and I learned that he was building tiny homes from steel.
Right.
You know, and he built them as erector sets. And I was looking for somebody that had the manufacturing capability to build what I was building. We could build, like, we could build what I'm building. Like, we, you know, just to be clear, we could build what I built in my backyard, or we can build you an actual house in your backyard. We've got architect, you know, two of the inventors are architects. So if you wanted a greenhouse right now, we could build it for you. But what I liked about what Chris was doing was that he was making it like a kit, and that's what you need to get mass adoption, you know. So what we want to do is partner with Chris to design these greenhouses so they get shipped to you as a bunch of boxes of metal, right, kit.
Right.
And you know, there's going to be four corners that are going to go into the ground. You know, that's going to be the anchor point. It's going to work exactly like the one I did in my backyard, except it's going to be bolted together. It's going to look better. And that's the plan, is that we're going to start making, you know, kit versions out of them. And the interesting thing is that this passive solar design that I've talked about, it can also house humans. So the same envelope that's used for the greenhouse can also be used as a tiny house, where now in the back of the water wall is where you have your bedroom and your bathroom, right?
Uh-huh.
In the front of the water wall is where you have your living room, maybe your shower, you know, because the front of the greenhouse gets so hot, you could even have a little sauna there because it gets so hot. You could, you know, we could make a little miniature solar sauna in them because if you took some ThermoShield and made a little box in front of the glazing, that box would get like 100 degrees warm. And if you pour some water on the ground, you've got a sauna, you know, so they could even have a little sauna there, a little shower. You would want to put the shower in the hot side of the greenhouse so that that way it could be a solar shower, you know, where the water is kept warm by the sun, and you just go there and
I've got one. Well, you know, I got the parts of one. I haven't put it together yet.
The other component. Yeah. We use those all the time. Just a black bag, you know, a black bag you hang in the sun, and it's got a little nozzle on the end, and you open it. So that's the kind of shower you could incorporate. So now you're natural, you're solar. Remember, I haven't even talked about electricity yet, right?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't even talked about electricity yet. Now, to run the evaporative cooler, you're going to need some fans, which is going to require electricity. You're going to want some LED lighting. That's going to require some electricity. The aquaponics system runs from air pumps. They're going to require some electricity. But you could do this with solar panels and wind turbines, you know, to add that additional creature comforts. And now you can have a fully automated off-grid living condition. You know, the toilets are composting, so you don't need to be on sewer water. You use urine diverting toilets so that now the urine can be used as fertilizer. You've got a fully insulated structure so you can heat it with a tiny little rocket stove or a tiny little gasifier, which is something that we would want to incorporate for their cooking. We're trying to be sustainable, right? So we want to make sure that everything is off-grid and everything uses inputs that are there, you know, on the land. So
right.
You can make there's rocket stove technology, which can be used for cooking, heating. There's gasifier technology that can be used for cooking and heating. And now you can literally have a place. Once it's built, requires no inputs. In other words, once your fish are going, they have babies. Once your plants are growing, they have seeds. Once your mushrooms are growing, you can create more mushrooms. Once your compost is going, you have soil. Once the front of the greenhouse is over salt water, you've got an evaporative system for generating water. You know, now you've got a system that can work sustainably. And you know, if you use recycled steel from disaster areas, now you've got a truly sustainable, recyclable system. You know, let's talk about other, you know, instead of ThermoShield, you use hemp or wool or hempcrete or you know, straw bale construction, whatever. You can use more natural materials for the walls. For the glazing, you could use recycled glass. You know, so there's ways to do it naturally, right, sustainably.
Right.
But once it's, you've got a structure that feeds you, keeps you warm, and is completely off-grid and can generate more energy than it needs for, you know, for survival, which means now you have a way of selling energy on top of that. You know, so there's an additional income source besides the fish, plants, mushrooms, soil, and salt that are potential outputs. You also have electricity that could be another output. So now we could have tiny home villages that actually make money for governments, where the people do not have to be on food stamps, where the people do not have to be on welfare, where the people are learning how to grow organic, sustainable food in a sustainable way, where they can take this organic, sustainable food and supply it to restaurants, where now we can have local economies that produce food, and now we can give, you know, our homeless something to do, including a way to make a living. Now, somebody brought up the question that some homeless people have mental health issues and you know, they don't want to be in tiny homes. You know, we have to think of other ways to help those people. But for the people that do want help, you know, they could embrace this sort of technology and you know, thrive literally. You know, they could thrive instead of being on welfare. And this is, you know, the interesting thing. You know, imagine now with this technology that we have houses that feed you and don't require energy. Okay? And
man,
What percentage of the cost is that? Because I know you know the answer. What percentage of living is food and energy? You would probably know this because I know you've studied this.
No, I don't notice the stats on that. And you know what? It all depends on. Yeah, because households, I don't know the stats on that. But say
I think
it's now.
About 50, over 50%. I'm thinking
I would definitely say so. I'll tell you why. If you're living in, because a big part, at least the way I see it, a big part of sustainability or whatever is your individual lifestyle. Like some people,
right?
So let's say some people that you know, they want to get solar panels on their house and all that. I would say, you know, before you go solar electric, or even solar thermal for the heat or hot water, I would say you need to develop or not develop, adjust and adapt to a solar lifestyle. Now, here's what I mean by that. You have to stop wasting, okay? Because if you go into some people's homes in the wintertime and, you know, the house is like, almost tropical heat in there. And then, you know, they got rooms, which I don't like the idea of central heating and central air conditioning because you're heating and cooling rooms that you're not occupying.
Exactly.
But, and then some people shut the windows. You're not heating up Falls Church, Virginia, or any place like that. You know, shut the windows. So there's a lot of things, you know, put on a sweater. Instead of turning up the thermostat, how about putting on a sweater first? Or, right now, I'm in Florida. I put on a thermal t-shirt. Not a t-shirt, a thermal undergarment. And close the doors and shut, because I ain't turning on no heat. So, yeah, you have to adopt a lifestyle of wasting. And for some people who are addicted to wasting, they might not adjust to that idea. Now, before we go to Chris, before we open up your mic, I want to put this out here because this is why I asked you the opening questions, Carlos. And I just discovered this yesterday, some hours after we did the live stream. And tonight, we got a clubhouse, Hope Dream Habitat has a clubhouse room tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll announce that in a moment, but I wanted to put this out here because this is why I asked you the questions. Then I'm going to come to Chris. I just discovered yesterday afternoon, November, all right, first thing, let's go to October. Every October the 10th, it's World Homeless Day. I'm going to tell you my vision for this and Hope Habitat. Dream Habitat in a moment. Just my vision. Okay. World Homeless Day. The next one is October the 10th, 2023. That's the next World Homeless Day. Just off the top of my head, Manila. I've been to Manila before. Manila, Philippines is the number one city as far as numbers go is having the most homeless, biggest population of homeless people. That's in Manila, Philippines. All right. Now, and number two, man, we just missed this by a day or so. November, and the next one will be November the 12th to the 20th. It's a week of Thanksgiving because tomorrow's Thanksgiving. All right. And for those who want to know, we'll be here tomorrow too, Thanksgiving. I don't miss a day. All right, so weekdays at least. All right, tomorrow. All right, so the first week in Thanksgiving week is National Hunger and Homeless Awareness Week. All right. So I'm opening up Chris's mic, and this is, Carlos, you can answer this too. What I want to know is, now I'm thinking ahead of, I'm thinking out into the future, I'm in 2023 already, is we have the network, because we have somebody from Central America on the last couple of days and all over the place. So, and then on Clubhouse, it just gets bigger than that. Let me open up Chris's mic here. For next October, because like I said, World Homeless Day is October the 10th. The next one is October the 10th, 2023. And then the week of Thanksgiving every year is National Hunger and Homeless Awareness Week. So Dream Habitat, Hope Dream Habitat has a solution to feed people as well as house them. My question is, I'm just throwing this out there, we're just thinking out loud this morning, is, and this is why I'm going back to the beginning. Matter of fact, let me get the stats out. Hold on, Chris. Hold, where the stats at? Okay, here we go. All right, I have to make an. I said Toyota, they manufacture or they assemble 29.9 cars. I did read that, but on this new table I have, they say Volkswagen, a German company, Toyota, a Japanese company. All right, Volkswagen manufactures or makes 19.9 cars per minute. And Toyota, which is right behind them at 19.8 cars per minute. Now, Hyundai, and Hyundai's got a pretty interesting backstory, but we're not going to go through that today. They do 13.7 cars per minute. They're the top three globally. Then you have General Motors. They assembled 13 cars per minute. Ford does 12.9 two cars per minute. And let's say the average car has about 30,000 parts. On average, we know some cars have more, some cars have less, but, you know, we're just going with 30,000 cars, 30,000 parts per minute. That includes the screws, everything that's included in the car. All right, Nissan is next. I mean, and we're going in descending order now. Nissan, 11 cars per minute. Honda, 10 cars per minute. FCA, 8.8 cars per minute. Renault, 7.9 cars per minute. Nissan, 6.9 cars per minute. So my question to Chris and Carlos is, I'm thinking, because I see into the visible, I can imagine this. How many structures, tiny houses, dream habitat structures, can we produce, even if it's just one? Because we have the geographical on-the-ground, boots-on-the-ground network. For World Homeless Day, which is next October the 10th, and National Hunger and Homeless Awareness Week, the 11th and Thanksgiving week of next year. So anyway, what are your thoughts on that?
Okay,
because I'm looking at if human beings have figured out how to, what do you call it, Chris, proof of concept, we know that human beings can take 30,000 parts and put together a car. So what do you got? What are your thoughts on that? How many of these can we build next year? It might not be next year, but I'm dreaming big. I'll shut my mouth. Chris, you got the floor.
Let's go off the square footage of an average home, not a tiny home. We'll say 1,500 square feet.
Okay.
It takes, all right, per that we cover, it takes 1,000 pounds of scrap metal. So if I've got to have 15,000 pounds of scrap metal and each car is averaging 3,000 pounds, that's five automobiles to build one 1,500 square foot structure. One machine.
All right.
Will produce 1,500 square foot homes a day. And now if we broke that down and we were only building, 200 square foot homes, 500 square foot homes, that number's going to change, and it'll go up by whatever we decide the square footage is being ran that day. But if we just went on actually having affordable housing, the 1,500 square foot model, that could give you a 300 square foot, 200, 300 square foot garden, and it could still give you a 1,200 square foot house. That's at least a three bedroom. You can have four. You can probably have more. Depends on the design of how you lay it out and the ceiling heights. Now, being able to, even there in Florida, when you talk about a heating system for the winter and a cooling system for the summer, if you put a tankless water heater on the wall and you put zones throughout your house, and you can turn off zones, so you're not heating or cooling a room you're not using.
Right.
And you can make every room a different temperature, so your house can be a multitude of things, because people, sometimes you got elderly people that need it a little warmer than someone else that needs it a little cooler. And if you can just separate the two rooms, it's a wonderful thing, and you have that ability by putting in the heating system in the floor, in the concrete. When you do that, it turns into the cooling system during the summer because it's got cold water in it. So if we were going back to the original question of how many homes could we build, you figure I have three factories that could produce at least 80 1,500 square foot homes a day for the next 365 days. You know, tomorrow is National Hunger and Homeless Awareness. If we could make people aware that they could fix the hunger, they could fix the homeless problem,
right,
by just spending an hour, each person in America. Let's talk about this. Let's get down to math. You know, I love facts, okay? And the fact is what each person brings, usually two hands, okay? Not everybody has two
right.
hands. But we're going to say that on average, we're going to say you got two hands for the people that are there. Now, don't, that's not disqualifying, discrediting anyone with a handicap, because I taught a blind man how to do this. So I know you can do it. And the thing is, if you look at 250 million Americans, if we all spent 2 hours this year and used our two hands for those 2 hours, not our backs, just our hands, we could physically see every one of those homes, plus have them closed in. Because it ain't going to take 250 million Americans to build a million homes. So.
That's you're true.
If that makes sense, if anybody wants to elaborate on what it is, go on to the next thing.
But getting people to act right is always the hard part. You know, what I really like about Chris is, you know, he's taking action. And I want to take action. You know, I'm ex-military. I like execution. The execution portion to me is the most interesting portion, you know, because that's where you learn everything. And Chris has been executing, you know, and I'm very, very anxious to get with his team to figure out the design for what I've got using his technology and see how quickly we can start building these, because you know, being able to, you know, housing is one thing, but then as soon as you add the gardening, you also add the food component and you also add the mental health component. So I think once you combine the housing with the food production, you solve a lot of problems, you know, a lot of problems all at once. And of course, once you make it off grid, and if you make it a positive for the cities, where now these, you know, we're creating energy. Now I see a path, you know, through grants and things like that. You know, and you know, if there's anybody out there listening, you know, if you know anything about grants, getting grants, and maybe Chris already knows, because I've only known Chris just for a few weeks now. But my understanding is there's a lot of grant money available for programs exactly like what we're talking about. Also, on Indigenous people reservations is the other area that there's probably funding available. So in other words, there's ways other people can help by spreading the word, or maybe saying, hey, I know this person that knows somebody at the, you know, Indian reservation that you need to talk to that you know, could launch a project. But, you know, Chris has been on the ground a lot more, so I'm going to look to him for ideas regarding, you know, how we're going to expand. Well, you know, he's already got a pretty huge network.
Let's say,
how we're going to monitor, you know.
Let's say you have, like, so you have, all right, next October the 10th is World Homeless Day. And, of course, this week is what Chris just said, National Hunger and Homeless Awareness Week. So if you got a network, I think it would be pretty easy if you had a network of, I'm going to make it kind of small, like 20, 25, let's say 25 boots on the ground locations. But they've got to be trained first in order to, trained in advance to prepare for, you know, the actual building date. So now how are you guys
really
working that up?
No, you don't have to be trained in advance. No, not
okay.
at all. I can,
all right.
I can walk up to you in 10 minutes of us being standing in front of each other, I will have you building. So it's that simple. ABC 1 2 3. If you can count, if you know your alphabet, then you're going to know what to do. And this is you can't make a mistake other than you not being able to line up a line and put a screw through two pieces of metal.
Okay.
And once,
all right.
Once the jig is down for the trusses, see, what you do is you build a couple of walls. I can build them right there in your yard. You know, I took two guys. One was 26, one was 56. They had never worked together in their life. I take them over to Indiana, and we tear a trailer off its frame, straighten the frame so it's got a good level floor, and we put a metal floor on, and we put metal walls. We built the walls right there in the yard, and we built the trusses right on top of the wall package that we built. And right there in the trailer park, we were able to rebuild something and do it in a day. They built all the components, the trusses and the walls. They'd never touched the material before and never worked together before. So they built a 12-foot by 50-foot trailer, the frame of it, the trusses and the walls, and that's the simpleness to this. And it doesn't matter. It's not hard work. You won't break a sweat. And, you know, it's the best part is you don't touch a saw. But it's what you're able to see.
Okay.
And
that is so incredible. There's, you know, I keep going back to the erector set analogy. And, you know, as soon as he mentioned that, I immediately started visualizing. As a kid, I used to build erector sets. You know, I mean, you know, I was an engineer as a kid even. I'd take everything apart.
I had one myself.
Yeah. I could picture it in my mind. What we need to do, and we have a 3D graphic expert on Blender. We have a guy from the Czech Republic, Wojciech. By the way, if anybody needs, like, somebody that's an expert in Blender, Blender is an open source software for capturing designs, like making virtual worlds, video games. He's the one that if you look at the renders of the commercial version of the greenhouse that we have for Dream Habitat, that was done by Wojciech from the Czech Republic, incredible human and super, super talented. He can capture the whole entire Lego set or erector set, right? So that we can actually even start building them in the metaverse. You know, you could have a version in real life and then a version in the metaverse that could be used for sponsoring or something. You know, I'm trying to think out loud, but you could have where people contribute towards the real life version through the metaverse, you know, so it gets built in the metaverse, and that one that gets built in the metaverse that people contribute towards, that money actually builds the real one in the real world. And how cool would that be, you know, where people could come in and pitch in a buck or whatever, right? And actually, you could track the money coming in. You could see the thing being built, right? Because as the money comes in, that means we have the material getting, you know, generated. Once we have all the material, the remaining cost would be just to get us out there, you know, to get us out there to help. And then once it's built in the metaverse, which means it's funded, right? Now we go and we build it in real life. And I think that would be a potential way of monetizing and getting people that are in NFTs and gaming and all that kind of stuff involved as well. And even the kids involved, because, you know, the kids nowadays are the guys that are really good at programming. So anyways, just brainstorming out loud.
Right.
Design is brilliant.
There's
brilliant.
Tonight, you want to announce that, Carlos?
Yeah, I'll announce it. We're trying to get volunteers to come in and hang out at a set time of day, you know, just to keep – right now I've got my computer running, keeping the room alive. But I think in Clubhouse, once the last moderator leaves, I think the room closes.
Okay.
So it's almost like you almost have to have somebody manning the ship. I don't know how else to put it. So what I've been doing is I've been putting my work computer, and I've been playing music in there through my little music bot, just to keep the room alive. But if we really want to do it, you know, we're going to need people to help to come in and just kind of hang out and ask, you know, answer questions. And really, we need moderators, and those are people that understand what we're doing with Dream Habitat, which, again, you know, we're providing housing, you know, tiny homes that feed and house the homeless. That's the Hope for Dream Habitat project. And, you know, if we can have people that just know the basic, you know, the basic project and to be there to sort of man the phones. But you were thinking of something else. You were thinking of almost like an action center or something like that, L.A. or Chris?
Well, I was thinking of, because you had quite a few people on yesterday, so it's, well, if we, for instance, have what the project, Dream Habitat, you know, the picture you have, the design you already have,
yeah,
or even the carport. And, you know, it's, okay, what do we need to do? First thing, who's interested, boots on the ground? And then,
right.
You know,
oh,
that's
a good idea. We could take sign-ups.
Right, yeah. All right, and then, all right, let's, what do we need to do? You know, what parts, what how mm-hmm. much is needed or whatever. The first one built. I mean, you already
right.
done one, but
location.
You know, right, location where it was going to be
well,
built, and so people
well,
can actually see it.
I haven't done one with Chris yet. I haven't done one with Chris yet. You know, I've done the one in my backyard, and actually, I
mm-hmm.
would like to have Chris take a look at what I did in my backyard and see how he would adapt it towards his. You know, it's a frame, so I mean, I'm already thinking about it, Chris. You know, I mean, literally, I used a carport, which is nothing but a frame, an A-frame. Right. So I imagine anything that I did, you could do with steel easily and just have it be a bolt together system is what I'm thinking. But that design is not done yet, by the way. You know, we're still working on integrating. You know, I want to go to Chris and say, you know, because Chris obviously is a super intelligent human that has built houses, you know, is what I'm getting. And I apologize for not knowing Brother Chris as well as I should. But Chris, you know, you could probably look at what I have in my backyard, right, and figure out how to convert it over to your system. And then I have somebody that once you figure that out, I have somebody that can capture the design so that we could also, so we could also put it on the metaverse. You know, I'm thinking of gamification and other ways of monetizing. But Chris, that's something you could do, right? Is just look at the design we have and see how you would build it using your technology?
Definitely. And like, you know, when most people build, they build in squares, you know, so it's either rectangles
right.
or something in that angle or even, you know, an outside 120 or something, you know, where a wall turns
right.
at an angle. But the thing is I can build round walls. I don't care.
Oh, brother.
So,
you know what?
It,
you know what?
It doesn't matter.
I'm going to stop you right there because we're going to build the rectangular version first, right? Because that's the one we got a proof of concept on. But as soon as we finish that one, I want to get working on the geodesic version because now that you've told me you can do circles are actually way better than rectangles. First of all, they don't catch the wind. You know, like when you look at rectangular houses, right? You know, talk about a bad design for hurricanes. You know, you've got a flat wall, literally a sail, right? Whereas when you look at nature, everything is curved. Look at seashells, look at paper wasp nests, look at bird nests, look at, well, I'm going to stop there because I can
look
keep going.
Look at the
going.
Tree. It doesn't matter.
Look at
anything.
The tree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything. Nature does not have right angles, literally. Well, I guess stones do, you know, quarries where they break at right angles. But other than that, nature is not round. And I have a design where the water wall becomes a water cube. The rectangle becomes a dome, and now you've got a structure that's like very, very, very resilient. And by the way, domes maximize space usage. That's the other thing I learned about domes. They minimize material usage and they maximize space, a dome does. And when you get into geodesic domes, which is, you know, a way of estimating a circle, right? Now you've got triangles, and the interesting thing about triangles is they have a central axis that allows them to rotate. And what's interesting about rotation is that now you have a structure that can breathe, right? If you take a dome, a geodesic dome, and you make every triangle able to rotate, now you have a dome that can breathe. Certain triangles can open, certain ones can close, right? So you have a living building at that point. When you start adding solar panels, and there's glass now, right now there's glass that will go from dark to light and also work as a solar panel. Super expensive. You know, I'm as you can tell, I'm a futurist. I think, you know, I'm thinking 10 years from now. You know, so now you've got these triangles that are actually all glass solar panels that can also transmit or reflect. They can make the building dark, or they can make it see-through. Now you've got a building that you can put anywhere on Earth that will adjust to the latitude by turning some panels dark, some light, opening some, closing some, and now you've got basically a building that tracks the sun and that also breathes, you know, because at every one of the triangles you have sensors, you have a stepper motor that allows you to control the triangle, and then you have sensors, temperature, humidity, wind, pressure, all those sensors. So now the building itself is a sensor that can gauge where the sun is, where the wind is, where the heat is, where the cold is, and it can start sort of adapting itself for whatever region it's in. And I know I'm talking super futuristic, but with what Brother Chris is talking about, you know, I'm seeing it in my mind right now, and it's doable. But of course, you know, we've got versions that we can build now that are easier to build. You know, that are based on rectangles, but I guess we could make some curved surfaces too on them. Yeah, I guess there's no reason why you couldn't take every flat end and make it a curved wall, right? In other words, if you took a rectangle and you made every wall a curve, now you basically have an egg shape, or, you know, you have a structure that's better suited for hurricanes and winds and things like that. So, yeah, I think we could even do that with the version I have in my backyard, but it would take some metal bending, you know. And how do you do the twisted stuff?
You know, the cool thing we could do with this whole system is we could make, like, in a flooded situation, people along the rivers and, you know, along the coast or whatever, we can make these things float.
We can do
quick connects. To the sewer, cap off the sewer so it's not getting into everywhere and going into the water system that is already flooding the entire system. We can have quick break bays on the electrical, but also it could still be powered while it was floating because it's running on solar.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's so many options to what we can do. It's what do we do, you know, and when do we do it? And with it being, you know, him bringing it up and it being National Hunger and Homeless Awareness Day for Thanksgiving, what will we be able to be thankful for after tomorrow, you know? And what can others be thankful for? And the main thing is giving people a purpose. See, I'm not just giving them a home. I'm giving them something to do. When they get done with what they get, when we get done doing that, they're going to have a place to sleep. How amazing is that?
And they could build another one, right? In other words,
and they wake up tomorrow and do it again for someone else, and now I'm paying them.
Right. Right. Because your model, if I understand you correctly, Chris, is that we go and have the workshop and build the first one, but the whole point of it is to enable the community to build the next one, right?
Correct.
So that next time, they just order it. In other words, the first one, they order it with us, and we come and we have the workshop, boots on the ground, we teach them how to do it, we build it, and as Chris always says, we do the talking after the work is done, right? In other words, once we're done with the work, then we do the talk and we have the happy hour or the kegs or whatever, you know, to celebrate. But now, Chris, you've enabled the community. You've given them something more, like you said, you've given them a structure, you've given them a skill, and now you've given them a path to build the next one for the next family that needs it.
Yes,
I love that model, brother. I really love you came up with that. I mean, I'm not acting surprised. I'm just saying that's an incredibly powerful model, I think. Because it brings commitment.
Accountability, okay?
Accountability.
It puts pride into people that don't have it. The ones that's been stepped on and disgraced and discouraged, this gives them pride. They own this. They earned this. This is theirs. They can
and they help
they,
build
they
it.
This, they're like, I built that. And not only did I build that,
wow.
I built 100 other ones this month, you know? And
wow.
That's what our children need to be able to see, what they are able to do and what they're going to be. Because
Now
you know,
that person has a job, right? That person now – you've also created
that,
a job because now that human – can build another one and get paid to do it.
Correct.
Wow.
Right.
I'm sorry to keep interrupting, Chris. I apologize for that. I'm just really thankful that we crossed paths.
I was interrupting you, my brother, so I just did it again. I love you guys. I love the fact that we can sit here and have a real conversation. People from around the world can get in here and actually put their two cents into this. This is the cool part about having a podcast and taking phone calls. You know, yesterday there was, you know, people looking at not everybody's going to do this. That's right. But we don't want to be the ones making the decision for them. So we want them to get the opportunity to make the choice because we all get to choose. We get to choose whether we're sitting here listening to this podcast. And what's beautiful is there's people around the world that are choosing to be here with us right now that are giving us opportunities, okay, by working in unity together. That's you and I together's why, right? And we're going to build communities. We're going to put that unity in a community because I've never seen a community unite. I've never seen the United States unite. I ain't seen the United Nations unite. But we're going to ignite it because I wound up getting the list. I got the list from the United Nations of the 17 things. And by me getting that list, it gave me something else. It gave me something to then for us to work on. Now, I want to go over the list real quick. I'm going to do it without any interruptions. So here it goes. Number one, no poverty. Okay, what did I say? We want to take poverty to prosper, right? So if we pick up our people off the street and on their feet, and we make our chain out of titanium, our weakest link is as strong as our strongest link. Now, number two, zero hunger. So we know, number one, we're trying to create a sustainable way of life, creating jobs, creating purpose, creating joy. So we've got number one. Now we're on zero hunger. Okay, we're wanting to do greenhouses that cost you nothing but to plant a seed. So now... Number three, good health and well-being, okay? Mind health is over everything because stress will kill you faster than anything. So we want to show people that. Quality education, knowledge is key. And all you have to do is pay attention and you can get it for free. All right, so number five, gender equality. Man or woman, you are equal. Black, white, yellow, red, you are equal. You are all humans on planet Earth. That gives you hope. You are hope. You are hope. But you're also you. And you're the unique, and you're the you in unique. You're the you in understanding. But let's see if you start understanding. Now, number six, clean water and sanitation. We can produce water from air, catch carbon. We can clean the water with systems that don't cost nothing once they're in place. So when a disaster comes in and the water rushes, all that is contaminated. We need to clean it, and we have a way to do that. So we've got to implement it, but we've got number six. Now we're on seven, affordable and clean energy. We have that. Now, number eight, decent work and economic growth. That's what we have. That's what we're creating. So, nine, industry, innovation, and infrastructure. We are wanting to fix what is failing. That's the infrastructure. The innovation is we have a solution to fixing the problems of the Industrial Revolution, and industry is number one in those three. So I went backwards. But we've got that covered. Number 10, reduce, I want to say it's inequalities. It's inequalities. Now, that is, if you're handicapped, you are just as important as someone that isn't. To me, you are going through a life that I'll never see. You're going to have feelings about things that I need to understand. So that comes down to reducing the separation and the division. And, all right, so that's number 10. All right, sustainable cities and communities. What are we talking about? So that's number 11, sustainable cities and communities. Now, number 12, responsible consumption and production. So if we're responsible about recycling the material that's being destroyed, that's being sold on the public market out there that these people are getting rich from, your Nintendos and washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, water heaters, and cars, because every house has these items. You might not have the PlayStation, but you got the hot water heater. You got, most people have washers and dryers, and you got heat, you got furnaces, so stoves, you know, refrigerators. So if we are responsible with our consumption and we reuse this plastic, styrofoam, and fiberglass and all of the scrap metal, and we build a structure that will do nothing but increase in value over time, that will be the it's got an infinity circle for number 12. Number 13, climate action, because we know that the smallest organism in the ocean, and it actually has a picture of the whale that eats the plankton that makes our air. So we want to clean up the plastic and all them floating islands that are out there of all that trash. I've got a man that can take everything from the mustard and the mustard package and make a product that won't leach but will float, can make power systems over water systems for third world countries. But we can take the trash instead of putting it in the ground and making a product out of it. It has an R value. Don't burn. It don't leach, though. Okay, so the second we can catch leaching, people, you can look that up. Leaching is when you look at a styrofoam cup or a plastic cup and the condensation, how it goes out of the plastic and winds up on the outside of the cup. That is leaching. And you can watch it go right through a styrofoam cup. Put a colored fluid inside of it and watch. It won't hold that fluid and keep it inside of it forever without doing some more to it. So that's where we add the plastic and the fiberglass. So it, by using that, it creates the non-leaching. All right, I'm at 14, life below the water. And that is what keeps us alive. So we need that. Now, 15, life on land. And that's showing our elephants and stuff in the picture. Now, to me, I watch all these commercials about the animal ASPCA, and, you know, all these different organizations that are trying to, you know, house animals. The thing is if we gave every person a home, they could take an animal and we'd empty every shelter in the country, housing the human ones and the animals. And then we've got number 16, peace, justice, and a strong institutions. To me, peace on earth, and it's in your hands. And that's by using the palm of your hand, not the back of your hand. We don't need to smack nobody. We don't need to knock them down. We don't need to push them. So we don't need the back of our hand. We need to pick them up. And the only way we can do that is by gripping. So let's get a grip. Now, number 17. This is the one thing that I said it takes for all. It takes unity, right? It says 17 is partnerships for the goals. So if we come together, the human race, as human beings, being human, we can answer all 17 of these things immediately and stat. When I say stat, that's either superior to a tent or superior to a trailer, but it is immediate. And I'll land my plane with finishing those 17. I'm going to say that. Lose everybody?
Did we lose somebody? Or are you...
No, now you're on. I'm hearing somebody now. I was just saying we were on dead air. Did you guys hear me? I'll finish with the 17 things that the UN would like to address, and every one of them have been addressed in this conversation and will be continued to be addressed every day. But now what address do we send the product to, and where are we going to meet you? And that's what I'm ready for.
You know, no, we heard everything. I had my mic muted, and I was surfing for electric cars, electric vehicle, EVs, in particular. Speaking with Carlos, the carport that you put together, will it have a component where you can charge up your car?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I looked at the solar stuff, and it is an expensive component. I think the batteries right now are the most expensive part of the solar systems. I think a Tesla, what is it called? The what is the name of that Tesla battery? That thing's like, I think like $10,000 or something like that. I know there's ways to do solar, DIY solar yourself, but I think the solar component adds a good chunk of change. But like you said earlier, right, it depends, right? If you're going to be sitting there trying to run 50 TVs and live the life, you know, it's the lifestyle, right? For solar, you have to adapt to a low energy usage. You have to change your living standards. Otherwise, you're going to need a gigantic system that's going to be, you know, $30,000-$40,000. Like for me to go completely solar in my house right now with the amount of energy that I use and the batteries and the equipment and everything, I think I calculated it's like, I don't know, like $20,000 or something like that. I know there's ways to do it just, you know, getting deep cycle batteries, but, you know, they're messy and they take up a lot of space. I really like the passive solar approaches. Where you're using geothermal or thermal batteries, et cetera, rocket stoves, composting toilets, gasifiers, That's the way I would go if I was doing, you know, off-grid. I'd probably go with gasifiers, rocket stoves, net zero, and then minimal solar and wind, just enough to, you know, well, to keep the cost down. And I think that that would be a good way to go for myself, you know, if I was doing something like that.
You know, just so people do know, right now the 8-foot by 20-foot homes that we are completing every day do have solar. They cost $5,000 to power them. So that 8-foot by 20-foot tiny house costs $5,000 for the solar components for it to be in operation. And I can take it off the grid for another $5,000. So $10,000 total.
You're saying, so
yes.
$10,000 gets you solar off grid?
No, $10,000 will take you off the grid and give you the gray water tank, and it will give you the fresh water tank, and it'll
give
you a composting toilet, and of course it'll give you the solar. So I can go 100% off the grid, $10,000 added to the price of the construction of the home on an 8-foot by 20-foot. So that's 320 square feet.
8-foot by 20-foot, that's 160 square feet. 8 by 20. That's 160 square feet. You said 8 by 20, right?
I've been in,
I've
slept in one of those a couple of times. Yeah. I've been in one of those a couple of times, and I'm 6'8". So, where I see it, well,
I got
where I see the ball going is, I've said this before, honey, if you want to look into the future, if you, you know, got a little spare money, go visit different parts. Like, I sort of looked into the future when I was over in Europe, and I just saw, you know, that's how I got into this renewable energy stuff and solar and tiny houses. What they were doing over there already, you know, we're talking about 10, 15 years ago. Then if you want to go to places like Japan or China, you'll see stuff. Rural Africa, it's you'll see stuff. Matter of fact, I'll give you a good example, because the price of all this stuff is going to go down. At one time, if you get a picture somewhere online of the original fax machines, you know, they were pretty big and clunky, you know, very expensive, and only certain businesses could afford them. The average consumer couldn't afford one. The average, computer when they first came out, you know, but as time went on, and engineers do their thing, you know, things shrink in size, and as more people buy, the price goes down. So what they've done in, like, parts of rural Africa, all over the continent, and then in many parts of India and Southeast Asia, and that's why I urge people to check out the Barefoot College. You know, they've taken these, you know, like rural villages completely offline, and some were connected to the grid. And the audio that I played, I don't know if I played it yesterday or the day before yesterday, of Ursula Sladek in Germany. Now, you know, Germany's a westernized country. But they put the nuclear power plant, they put them out of business. And went completely solar. So, as more people become aware, and then, you know, you have a bunch of eco villages throughout the United States and globally. You'll see people. The phones, the electronics that we have. Anybody who wants a computer, a laptop. Or a desktop, or a smartphone. All right. In the early stages of those development, they were a lot larger than they are now. But now, you can be on welfare and have a phone. You can be on welfare and have a desktop or a tablet. Internet access virtually, is accessible to virtually everybody on the planet, unless you're in a place that, you know, there's no tower at all. But the price will come down, like it's done with the automobile. At one time, you know, the automobile wasn't attainable by everybody, but practically everybody now, if you want a car, you can get one. So I think that's the way it's going to go with a lot of renewable energy technology. You know, how fast? Go ahead, Carlos.
No, I was going to say, with Chris's model, you know, he's got it laid out where, you know, this size is X amount of dollars. If you add solar, this is how much you add. We can do the same thing with the aquaponics because it's an addition, you know, whenever you add something, of course, there's additional costs. So we could have versions, you know, just the house, you know, the house plus solar, the house plus aquaponics, the house plus aquaponics and solar. You know, so there could be various models. I just want to put that out there. But sorry to interrupt you there, L.A.
Yeah, people have to be they have to be exposed to it. And then, you know, go from there. We got another caller here, 314 area code. Your mic is open.
And you guys have been doing a lot of building today. You know, somebody mentioned about a geodesic dome. Geodesic dome is the cheaper way to go about it, but the most efficient is the monolithic dome, but it's a little bit more expensive. And the monolithic dome, you have to have the most efficient construction model. It's taking an air foam, and the air foam is shaped to your final structure. Aerofoam is a material like a sock. And I don't know if you're familiar with it, but you put a fan on, you have an entry door, then you have like a foyer. You have a fan that applies pressure to the dome, blow it up to its shape, and maintain that pressure while you coat the inside of the material. You coat it with a styrofoam, and they apply rebar on it. Then they come in and they spray shotcrete on the interior. And after a period of time, they release the pressure, and it just stands there. And you can also finish the outside the same way, too, if you want to. But those things are very efficient from all the elements and natural disasters. And what makes them so great, too, is that your interior studs for your division of your spaces in the room can be metal studs. Thus, by getting your homeowner's insurance down to about $100, $200 a year, complete coverage.
That's now, let me ask you, the geodesic dome, I know Buckminster Fuller, he was pretty big on that structure. And you're from St. Louis. Would that be allowed?
Geodesic drone has flat surfaces on it.
Okay.
In a wind-generated storm, those flat surfaces will become subjected to what's called a Venula effect. And they will just lift right up off of the structure. It's like the plane, like the wings on an airplane. But with a monolithic dome that's uniform entirely in curvature, those type of effects are not imposed upon the structure. But like I said before, it takes special construction in order to do a monolithic dome. I've seen some monolithic domes that's like 300 feet in diameter. greater.
I have two, and I know of one down in that went through Hurricane Katrina, and it was supposed to withstand 250 mile an hour winds. But the thing was, is that doctor that owned that house, his family, he lost his entire family, but he held on to a top of a tree for 2 weeks because he was in the water, and his dome went under there. Okay, it took his house, but it didn't necessarily take it down like it did the rest of them. That monolithic dome is a wonderful structure. There's no stronger structures than a dome. You know, you put an arch on something, that is a super strong structure. And the thing about, we can build the monolithic domes, you know, anybody that's building them, we can do the interior walls of it. So now you can have all this separation, and it ain't got to be made out of concrete, and it ain't got to be made out of wood. So we can marry perfect to concrete 100%. We can marry to the foam. But I do know they do spray it with a concrete form. So when they spray it with that concrete, that is the hard shell that it winds up becoming. But it's just like looking at a brick wall, and you put a dome on, you know, you make an arch out of that. The weight of each of those blocks hold it together. Don't even take mortar, but when they put mortar in, it just, you know, makes it look finished. But it, you know, you look back at what we've done with the pyramids, you know, yeah, we're looking at straight edges, but you're also looking at something that has no sealant between the slabs. So I can say that we can marry perfect to a monolithic dome, but I can give you the interior of it. I can give you second floors of it, third floors of it. You can make it as tall as you want and as wide as you want, and we can separate it. So we can give you all of your interiors to that, and it still be built green and built to STEM qualifications. And that's the goal here, is to be LEED certified, you know, make homes as efficient as we could possibly make them, but make them to give our children something that will last 1,000 years or more, and that we can recycle if it ever is destroyed by Mother Nature. Because Mother Nature's wrath cannot be matched, besides maybe a nuclear bomb going off, but I think can do more than a nuclear bomb can do if something tragic happens. So I love those products. I'm all for any kind of green product. If it's a building product, I haven't found one yet that we couldn't marry to. So there's some marriage there to that. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, another thing about a dome, when rodents come in, the only thing they can do is run around the wall until they come through the door and head on out. Ain't no place to hide.
Yeah,
Now, as far
now,
as the thermal,
are those in St. Louis, are they in the city proper, St. Louis? To your knowledge, now if a person wanted to build one of those, could they build them as a residential house?
Well, you know, there you get into the case too, affecting the standard design already in the community.
Right.
Some communities, if you're in a community with brownstones, well, the people gonna frown you putting a dome in there. Or even if you put even a modern box structure. But it just depends. The best place to see those is down in Texas, in a town called Italy. That's where the manufacturer originated. But it's just a design somebody may consider on doing. And you know, you talk about the solar in the using the mass, solar mass, in order to heat your house. The house that I showed you that I designed and built, my roof to ceiling, my roof material, I use two layers of 5/8 real plywood, and I use 2x8s for the rafters and also even for the ceiling joists, which was immediately below the rafters, afforded me a space about almost 50 inches because the ceiling was super insulated and the walls were too. But see, what it afforded was a dead air space above the insulation where you could run a rectangular duct that would come out, that would terminate to the floor of the upper level, and it would originate in the upper level of the solar mass so that heat come off the mass rises up in convection through the tunneling ductwork, and it would come out at the floor level of the upper level and just naturally rise to the top and heating that space at the same time.
Okay.
Now that tunneling duct would have to be insulated so you don't give up heat as it travels underneath the roofing sheeting. But it worked real well. But of course, okay, I walked away from that. I told you about that. But no, it's not a design. And see, I tell you something else. In a lean-to into a ground, you know, well, okay, your solar part there, this, whatever the structure is, then you can go under, you can have earth to take you up to near lean-to, like a lean hill, a slope hill, earthen structure. Then you come up into the other structure, which could be above ground, and that's where the heat that originates in the solar space flows up underneath that earthen part of your structure and comes up into your upper level and use the heat. And the same thing could be used for cooling too, because cold water falls. And I don't know if you guys know, there's an earth home along Old 66 coming out of California. And I don't know exactly where it is, but I know it runs, the old 66 that runs parallel to the new interstate highway. And some people built an earth home. And it has much of the design and techniques that I've heard you guys discuss, even to the old liter bottles of water and so on, so on, so on. It's a lot of people to visit. Mhm. Anyway, I keep listening.
Piyagi, what part of Texas did you say those that those homes were manufactured in?
Italy.
Let's see, Carlos, you there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I got cut off for a second, but I joined
back. No problem. Now you're from Ecuador. Well, how are they down there when it comes to, you know, renewable energy and, you know, extreme housing, you know, stuff we've been talking about?
Well, I came from Ecuador when I was 6 years old, and I didn't go back till I was 47. Going on 64 this February, so I know Ecuador is devastated right now with COVID and everything. Their economy is in shambles. You know, people are over there are starving, basically. It's in pretty bad shape. Can you guys still hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah.
Yeah, I just put on my headphones. I don't know. Actually, I don't know what the tiny home movement or the sustainability movement is in Ecuador. I do know that Ecuador was the first country to give Mother Nature rights, in other words, to recognize planet Earth as a living being. And we're the first country to declare natural rights for Mother Nature. So we're very pioneering in that respect. And of course, you know, we, you know, our indigenous people have had shamans, and they've been, you know, doing natural medicines and holistic stuff forever, just like other ancient people. But yeah, I'm not quite sure. There is a big movement towards eco-resorts. So I think this whole concept of eco-villages, eco-resorts would be very welcome in that region. There are some already. You know, there are tourist resorts where you can go and stay in the jungle and disconnect and get away from the internet and everything and just kind of be natural. So I think that's the opportunity in those regions. Like we had Farmer Jay from Belize, who
right.
has 100 acres that he wants to build an eco resort. And out of luck, just recently we met somebody on Clubhouse, a lady named Joy, and her group is building eco resorts all over the world. So we're having a meeting with them to see if, you know, it looks like we're getting the pieces of the puzzle, right? We got somebody with land. We got somebody that wants to build eco resorts, and then we have the technology. So it looks like we may have a project, hopefully in Belize.
Okay. Now tonight, the clubhouse room, I mean, where do we go at 9 p.m. tonight? That's Eastern Standard Time, people. That's where your local time zone.
Yeah, it's 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll be on the Dream Habitat Club, and the room is being hosted 24/7. It's actually transmitting this radio show right now. So right now we're live on Clubhouse in the Dream Habitat room that's running 24/7. And you know, at 9, we're just going to, you know, we got to start organizing, right? Getting
right.
some people to volunteer to man the phones, come up with a mission, plan of attack, a first project, all those things.
All right. Now, tomorrow, well, I'll be, because I'm just looking at Thanksgiving as just another day. So I'll be in here tomorrow. I know a lot of people, it was a happy travel day today for many. And I guess most people will be in place tomorrow, but so we'll be at the regular time as well as Friday. And we might bring in another topic or two in addition to housing tomorrow. Whatever you guys want to talk about, I'll just put it that way.
Yeah. I was going to say, you brought up something tomorrow. You know, tomorrow is mm-hmm. National Hunger and Homeless Day. Let's make that the topic. It is.
All
let's
right.
do that tomorrow.
That'll be tomorrow's topic. And then we
yeah.
already got a solution. So, like I say, that now for people, if you can get in the Clubhouse tonight, it's because Clubhouse, we have a lot of freedom here, but I think with Clubhouse, you have even more freedom of speech and communication and all of that. So, be on the lookout for that. So on that note, thank you all for dropping in. We got people on the board and everything, but since it is, like I said, so I know some of you probably have to travel or some of you have to prepare. And, you know, some people are into the holidays, some people are not. So, but in any event, it's the holiday season. So, anyway, I'll be on Clubhouse tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then we'll be back here tomorrow. Chris has already named the topic. Since it is National Awareness. No, what is it, Chris?
It is National
Hunger and Awareness, right?
World.
I mean, hunger
and
homelessness. And
homeless awareness.
Yeah. That's tomorrow's topic. Turkey there. All right. Everyone have a good rest of the day. See you guys tonight at 9.